Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Tech Doctor Podcast. I'm Allison Hartley, and with me is Dr. Robert Carter. And today we are going to be doing what I have nicknamed the Hodgepodge Cast, because what we're basically going to be doing is talking about a bunch of different topics today. Isn't that right, Robert?
That's exactly right. And hello, everyone, and glad you joined us today. Thank you for listening, as always. We have a little bit of unfinished business from the last podcast. Hopefully, no one remembers that last time we held a competition and I performed very, very poorly on Braille Touch. I sort of blew it. I was pretty excited to demonstrate my world championship, but it turned out to be like a Babe Ruth striking out in the World Series or something. So, what I want to begin with, if it's okay with you, Allison, is another little demo of Braille Touch. And yes, just for the sake of fairness, I'm going to ask you to time me one more time and see if I
I
can,
can do that.
see if I can do better. Because not because I have such a huge ego that I have to massage. I mean, that's maybe part of it, but the bigger part of it is I want people to have a fair idea of what you can do with Braille Touch and what I normally do with Braille Touch. And so we'll try the quick brown fox sentence one more time just to see how that goes. And then I think I'm going to type a couple more sentences after that, just to show you how you can kind of type something on the fly if you want to send a text message or create an email or send a tweet or something like that with Braille Touch. So,
Sure, let me just get my trusty stopwatch going here. 3, 2, 1, go.
Stop. Capital T-H-E space Q-U-I-C-K space B-R-O-W-N space Brown F-O-X space J-U-M-P-S space J-O-V-E-R space T-H-E space L-A-Z-Y space D-O-G period dog.
Start. 27.0
All
seconds.
right, you shaved off 6 point something seconds. 27.0.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what happens is for some reason when I'm holding this phone the way that I am to keep it kind of close to my microphone, I have trouble getting the one finger flick right to activate the space key, and that's what seems to be slowing me down, and I'm not quite sure
I guess we'll accept that excuse.
why. Yeah, well, it does sound just a little flimsy maybe, but I would flick and it would just get a little click there. The space wouldn't actually activate. So what I want to do is actually try typing a few more sentences here,
Sure. You
just to
still want to time it?
No, you don't need to time it,
Okay.
but I just want to see if I can show people. So I'm just going to type something like, "Hello, Tech Doctor listeners. This is a demonstration of Braille Touch. Let me just try that."
Okay.
Capital H-E-L-L-O space. Hello. T-E-C-H space. Tap D-O-C-T-O-R space. Doctor L-I-S-T-E-N-E-R-S. Comma, lisp space, T-H-I-S, space, S, delete S, I-S space, is, A space, D-E-M-O space, O-F space, capital B-R-A-I-L-L-E, capital T-O-U-C-H, period, Braille Touch.
So I'm going to ask the phone to repeat that back now.
Alert, hello Tech Doctor listeners, this is a demo of Braille Touch.
So I just wanted people to get an idea, really, that this is a viable app for entering text, for entering email, for doing tweets. Does that make it a little more clear that it really is usable, do you think, Allison?
It sure does.
Yeah, and I don't know what your experience has been, how much you've used it for those kinds of things, but it is. I find for me, oftentimes it's my go-to app when I'm wanting to use a keyboard on my phone to write something.
Me too, more and more between Braille Touch and Flexi. I'm really using those apps more exclusively rather than the iOS keyboard for things like texting and tweeting and, well, even a little bit of copying and pasting just to see how it works. But for me, it's mainly when texting and tweeting. My go-to when I'm not using Siri has been now Braille Touch and Flexi.
Okay, great. And we're going to talk a bit more in a minute about Flexi because there is some exciting news about Flexi. But before we leave Braille Touch, I have heard from several people who really love it and who are doing well with it. And I've also heard from several who are having a lot of trouble just wrapping their head around it. And some of these people that I'm hearing from who are having trouble are really tech savvy people who normally conquer technologies really fast. And so I really began to realize that for some people, the idea of trying to type Braille with your fingers in a vertical position seems to really mess with their brain. I mean, I'm not being funny or sarcastic about this. I mean, it really doesn't seem to make sense to some people. Some people just gravitate to it quickly and are able to do it with very little problem. I think that was the case for you, and that was the case for me.
There are
But
definitely incidences where the letters feel a little bit different because you're typing in a vertical position, but I found that I've been able to pretty much make the transition without any issues. But everybody's different, so.
everybody's different, but I was thinking about this and I wanted to try a little experiment to see if I can walk you through something that either will absolutely make no sense, and
Okay.
at that point we'll say, nice job, tech doctor. It's always fun to experiment, but this ain't gonna do it. Or you might say, yeah, that actually helps, and it might be a way to sort of practice a little bit and get accustomed to this idea of typing Braille vertically.
Sure.
What I want you to do is just put your two hands together, your palms together, as if you were clapping your hands.
All right.
And keep them together. And so you've got right now, you've got all your fingers touching, and they're and so I want you now to lace your fingers together so that your first three fingers on each hand are resting on top of the knuckles of your other
Other
hand.
hand, okay.
If you're holding your hands like that, just clasped together that way, and if you pretended that your knuckles was your Braille Touch iPhone touchscreen, tell me which fingers you would tap on to type the word Allison.
Okay, so to type the capital sign, I would tap my right ring finger on my left ring knuckle.
Exactly.
And then the A would be left pointer on right pointer.
Right.
L would be all three pointer middle and ring left
Right.
pointer middle on right. Then L again. Then I would be. I always have trouble with I on Braille Touch too.
Yeah.
I would be left middle finger on right and right pointer on
Exactly.
left. S would be left middle and ring finger on right plus right pointer on left. O would be left pointer on right and left ring finger on right plus the right middle finger on left. And N would be left pointer on right, left middle finger on right, right pointer finger on left, and right middle finger on left.
Okay, excellent. I'm thinking if people were to sit in the car on the way somewhere or sit in a meeting, clasp their fingers, and practice the Braille alphabet this way, the way you just described, that they would pretty quickly get the hang of this and then be able to transfer that skill to the iPhone keyboard with Braille Touch. What do you think about this half-baked crazy idea?
I actually think it's a very viable idea. I'm actually kind of just experimenting doing it now, doing my full name. And I'm finding that it definitely feels the same as if I would be doing it on Braille Touch. So I think this is great, actually.
It's a way to unobtrusively practice and sort of get used to the idea without worrying about, you know, dropping your phone or even having your phone. Mm-hmm. And it essentially, to me, and maybe it won't to other people, but to me, it sort of is similar enough to the actual using of Braille Touch that it might be helpful to some people.
I think so. Well done.
I also suggest that people make sure you hold the phone with your left palm right against
yes.
the left side, left end of the phone, and balance it then with your thumb and your pinky finger down somewhere around or maybe just below the volume buttons.
Mm-hmm.
You can do it that way with both hands, but if you do it that close with the right hand, it will actually block
cover up the speaker.
But if you do it that way and get used to holding it like that, you'll probably find that it becomes a really comfortable grip after a while, and it becomes one that really doesn't feel like you're gonna drop the phone. I mean, at least that's been my experience.
I've had some expressions of concern from people on Twitter that if you were to hold the phone in that position in a crowded area, say like a train or a bus or even just out in general public, that it could make you more of a target to get the phone snatched. I could see where that could be valid. However, I really find that for me, using this on the train has been a good experience, especially because the train that I ride, the BART train, is very loud. And so I can write in Braille without really having to necessarily hear the feedback of what I'm writing.
Right.
It helps me out.
Right. Well, okay, so just thinking about that logically for a second, I'm not quite sure I get how holding the phone that way, like you hold it for Braille Touch, makes it any more vulnerable to be snatched than the way I might hold it if I were using my thumbs to type in text on the regular keyboard or if I were using Flexi. I'm not quite sure.
Right. That was kind of what I thought too, but you know, everybody thinks differently about these types of things. But for me, it's just never really been a concern personally.
Well, the point is, I guess to some people, it probably feels
yeah.
like your phone is more vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
That it'd be easier for someone to grab it, and I think it's because it's not any way that we're accustomed to holding a phone. We've never
yeah.
even thought
yeah.
of holding it this way, at least I never had, until Braille Touch came along.
Yeah, no, me neither.
So I think it is new. It is something, you know, that we're all trying to get used to. Well, there is some exciting news on the Flexi front that it has now become a free app in the App Store, and I don't know how anyone can not be excited about free.
That is so exciting. I'm really, really pleased to hear that. It's so cool. And I love Flexi now.
Since it became free, is that when you really started using it, or have you been using it for a while? Or
that was when I did choose to try it after it became free. And,
oh.
and the only reason for that is that I had already found a pretty workable solution for me in Braille Touch. So my thought process at that time was, okay, I'm not going to necessarily pay for another app, which in many ways will do the same thing. But once it went free, I thought, well, heck, I may as well.
Sure. You know? Thanks to Flexi, the Flexi team, you don't have to pay for
it. Thank you guys.
Yeah. The big kudos to them for being able to do that. And I'm out of curiosity, when you use Flexi, how do you type with it? I type with my thumbs, but Lisa Salinger tells me that's pretty unusual.
I tend to type with my pointer fingers more with Flexi, actually. Occasionally the middle fingers as well, depending on what I'm trying to type and how fast I'm trying to go. But yeah, mainly the pointer fingers. And I prefer still at this point in my flexication to use it still on a flat surface when I can. It just is a little bit easier for me. I'm sure as I progress, I'll get to a point where I can hold the phone all kinds of different ways and flexify.
Well, one of my weaknesses with Flexi is trying to figure out how best to hold a phone. And I've tried a number of different ways and have never found the way that enables me to get the consistency that I would like, because a lot of how well Flexi does or doesn't work does depend on where you are on the screen when you're creating these patterns. You need to be pretty solidly in the middle of the keyboard for this for these patterns to be recognized pretty well. And if you're if the phone's slipping around, or if you're not holding it consistently where you're touching it more or less in the same general spot on the screen, to me, Flexi can become less accurate at that point.
The case in point, I was using it just on my lap in my comfy chair in the living room, and I tried to type "I love Flexi," and it came out "I love Henry."
Yeah.
I tweeted that just for humor's sake.
I was going to say, I don't know if you want to publish that or not, but
oh, it's already published.
It's too late. It's already gone. That's some people just don't mind tweeting their personal feelings all over the place. Okay. So it is really great that it's free. One of the reasons that I tend to gravitate to Braille Touch as an alternative keyboard more often than Flexi is that, for me, Flexi is really great when it either recognizes the word that you type, or when the word that you are trying to get it to recognize is in that list of suggestions that it presents you with. But if the word is not in the list of suggestions and you have to stop and manually enter the word, or even stop and manually enter the first couple characters of the word, and then you can, as you say, flexify the rest of the word, I've lost most of my earlier speed advantage at that point.
Yes, it does tend to become very cumbersome at that point.
And Braille Touch, since it doesn't use any kind of prediction, it just enters what you braille on the screen, you don't lose that speed advantage unless your fingers really get off track, or unless, like I was having trouble getting the space entered for some reason. If you run into a situation like that, then you certainly can lose some of your speed advantage. But that's the main struggle I have with Flexi, is as long as I'm going along and it's recognizing things either on the first try or they're in the suggestion list, I'm great. I'm golden. But when I have to try to get a word in there that it's not recognizing, it really slows me down. And honestly, I don't know overall whether that's a whole lot slower or faster. I've never timed it than just using the regular keyboard. I imagine it's still faster than using the regular keyboard, but it certainly is a bit of a shock for me to go from going really fast to all of a sudden back to a crawl when I'm trying to get something.
Just completely stop and slow down, yeah.
The great thing about these apps is that you can do like I do. You can have Flexi and Braille Touch side by side on your phone and switch back and forth and experiment with them, and you know, really figure out how to maximize both of them to get what you need from them. So,
It's all about choice.
It's all about choice. So, I did try, just before we leave Flexi, I did try Flexi on my iPad, and I have one of the full size iPads.
Okay.
And it was pretty cool. It was actually, I was actually able to pretty much hover my fingers over the keyboard just like you do on a regular real keyboard, QWERTY keyboard, and type pretty well that way.
Oh, that's cool.
With Flexi. So that's kind of exciting.
That's great. Many of you might remember a time when I was on the Tech Doctor podcast. I guess it was back in late 2011 when I came on, and part of what I talked about as a guest was jailbreaking my then iPhone 4S. For those of you who might not be familiar with jailbreaking, what it is a process by which you install a modified version of iOS onto your iDevice, which does not contain a lot of the restrictions imposed by Apple. So with this modified version of iOS, you can install various tweaks which allow you to do more with the device. For example, there's one that I have called Activator, and among it can do many things, but among one of them is I have my home button now in the lock screen set to be a play pause button for audio.
If people do want to jailbreak, of course you need to understand that you are opening yourself up to more vulnerability, because the apps that you are going to be installing from the jailbreak app store have not been approved by Apple.
That's right.
And they are not tested to the same degree for malware and things like that 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 the Apple store apps are.
Yes.
So you're making yourself a bit vulnerable, but at the same time you're also opening yourself up to new options and possibilities and tweaks that you don't have on your phone because of the fact that Apple hasn't allowed those to be built into iOS. Do I pretty much have that right?
You have it very right, yes.
And one of the things that I know you have done that you wanted to jailbreak for was to add, was it one voice or several voices to your phone?
I actually have two that I have added. The premium vocalizer Tom voice, which typically you would not be able to have as an option for a voiceover voice, and also the premium Australian Karen voice, which typically in order to get that, you would have to go through all kinds of rigmarole with changing your international settings, which I did at one point prior to jailbreaking. However, my issue was that it didn't stick. I restarted my phone and it went back to the compact voice. But now I have the option of switching between these two premium voices on my language rotor.
I'm assuming that that was the male voice that we heard when you were doing the timing a while ago?
Yes, that was Tom.
Can we hear just a little more of that, just so we
Certainly.
Can see what Tom sounds like on your
no
phone?
No problem. Let's get him running here.
7:15. Slide to unlock. Messages. Double tap to open. Calendar. Photos. Camera. Videos. Maps. Weather. Passbook. Weather.
And let's go into the weather app and just listen a little bit.
Weather. Local weather. Emeryville. High 61 degrees Fahrenheit. Low 39 degrees Fahrenheit. Hourly weather available.
And my phone thinks I'm in the wrong place right now.
Okay. But that's some really nice speech, though.
Yes. And I find it especially nice for reading. I switch between the Tom and Karen voices now, depending on what books I'm reading. It has really made, especially using iBooks, an absolute joy. I found that when I was using the premium Samantha voice, I wasn't using iBooks as much.
It's nice to have a good quality voice like that, though. There's no question about that. That there is some real appeal to that. I've also heard that when you jailbreak, and I'm not sure if this is true with the Samantha voice, I think it is true with all of them, that apparently you can get much more speed out of the voices.
There is apparently a tweak that you can install to, which will allow you to increase the speed of your voiceover voice of choice beyond 100%. I don't really see the need myself to do that. I like to have my voiceover at kind of a nice conversational speed, especially for reading. I recognize the fact that a lot of people have a need for speed, and that's great. And if so, I would encourage you to do some research on this tweak because it is out there.
The truth of the matter is that Apple does pay attention to the tweaks that are available in the jailbreaking community, whatever you call it. And Apple has actually implemented quite a few of those tweaks into iOS.
That's right. Most notably in iOS 6, the ability to launch apps with Siri, which when I jailbroke my 4S, that was one of the main reasons at that point that I chose to jailbreak. If in the next release or two of iOS, they do choose to incorporate some more of these voices, I would gladly unjailbreak because, like I said, that was my main reason for jailbreaking. The other tweaks that I find every now and then, they're a good bonus, but my main reason was to have these voices available to me.
Just about all the jailbreaking aficionados that I hear talking about it will ultimately say, be cautious about just not installing any and every tweak that you run upon out there. Only install the ones that you really think you'll use or that you really want, because after a while, eventually, the more of these that you install, you're almost certainly will eventually run into trouble somewhere down the line, in the sense that your phone will slow down or some app will misbehave and your battery life will get greatly reduced, or there'll be some mishap that will happen and you'll almost certainly have to figure out what went wrong and make it right.
Yes, you definitely do have to proceed with caution. When you are configuring some of these tweaks as well, you want to be mindful, especially if you're assigning gestures or button presses to accomplish different tasks. You want to be mindful, especially for us blind folks, of potential conflicts with voiceover.
Yeah, that's a good point. So it sounds like we can conclude that you're pretty satisfied with your phone, with the way that it's working now.
I am, yes.
So really you haven't run into any problems so far?
I have not run into any problems. I have been pretty conservative on the tweak installation front.
What size of phone do you have? How much storage do you have?
I have a 64 gig iPhone 5.
Yeah, so do I. And I you and I may be in the minority with this, but I really like having all that storage space.
Me too. Because we're hoping against hope that someday soon the NLS app for iPhone will be released. And then at that point, the space will really be a bonus.
You can bet we'll be podcasting about it, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Do you have any idea how much space those voices that you installed actually take up?
I know how much space is remaining on my iPhone now, but I don't remember what it was prior to my installing the voices.
But in terms of space, it sounds like, you know, these voices, even though they're really high quality, they're not just a huge
No, they're not gonna take up gigs and gigs of space.
Yeah.
They're only gonna take up maybe 1 to 200 megs a piece, perhaps.
Are there any resources or any place that you would point anyone to that you have off the top of your head who would want to know more about jailbreaking or would want to investigate it further?
I would certainly encourage individuals to post on forums in AppleVis. There have been some lively discussions surrounding jailbreaking recently. Obviously, the owners are being a little bit careful about the types of things that are posted in the guide section of the site, only because everybody wants to remain obviously on the up and up legally, and I totally understand that. However, there are some great podcasts in the podcast section of AppleVis regarding jailbreaking. Like I said, good forum discussions. There's also a new Zello channel. If you have Zello, it is called Jailbreak QA, and that's Jailbreak with a capital J, J-A-I-L-B-R-E-A-K, and then capital Q, capital A.
I guess we should point out that it is very easy to jailbreak your phone. You can simply restore it back to its factory settings through iTunes and get back to the iOS that you originally had.
That's right. It's super easy. So if you do notice that there is a problem with your phone, whether it's related somehow to the jailbreak or if there's some sort of non-jailbreak related issue for which you need to send it in for repairs, just make sure that you restore back to regular iOS prior to sending it in or taking it into the store so that you don't void your warranty.
For people who don't jailbreak, but who would like some other voices for reading text files and PDFs and doc files and things like that, there is a fairly new app out called VoiceDream. Are you familiar with VoiceDream?
I have heard of VoiceDream, and I do intend to play with it. That uses the a cappella voices, correct?
Well, they have several hundred voices in all different languages that you can download. And you can download as many voices as you want. They cost somewhere between $2 and $3 mm-hmm. per voice. But you can download, there are, I believe, 26 English voices that are available.
Oh my goodness, I didn't know it was that many.
Yeah, there are a ton of them. By default, you do get the a cappella Heather voice. It's really quite a nice app. It will let you read web pages. It'll let you read text files and PDFs and other doc files and even PowerPoint type files and just a ton of different options. Now, when I say read them, you basically just have to listen to it, read the file straight through. I mean, you can pause it, of course, but you don't have any real navigation other than being able to navigate by sentence. You can move back mm-hmm. and forward by sentence. If you're a voiceover user, you do have more navigation if you're a sighted user using the app, and they're probably going to bring more control over the text to voiceover. They've said in their documentation that's something that they're working on. But right now, it's pretty much a reader, but it will also interface with Bookshare. So you can download books into VoiceDream from Bookshare and read them that way. And you have the option of all these different voices, and you can actually switch to the different voices on the fly if you want. While you're reading a book, you can switch between voices.
Now, that's cool.
You can't use those voices as a substitute for Samantha as a voiceover voice. They have to be used from inside the VoiceDream app. But as long as people understand that, it's really not a bad deal.
I'm going to check it out for sure.
So I wanted to talk just a little bit about some hardware that I've recently become familiar with. And the first piece that I want to talk about, if people don't know, I am a complete headphone junkie. I love headphones.
And I never would have guessed.
But I got interested maybe last year sometime, and I think you did too, in a pair of headphones that instead of relying on your ears for hearing, they rely on the bones in your face.
And right, the aftershocks.
The aftershock. Right, they're bone conduction. And if you have those fabulous high cheekbones like Allison has, you know, you can hear fabulously, right? You just
amazingly.
Well, yes. You just put those aftershocks on, and we're kidding, but honestly, they do have a pretty good sound.
They do.
I wouldn't choose them for my most frequently pair of headphones to listen to music on, but they sound really good for listening to podcasts, which I do an awful lot of, and they sound good for listening to audiobooks. I use mine a lot, and you said that you used yours, but I think you got a bit frustrated as I did with the fact that these the original aftershocks were wired headphones.
Yes, that and bothered me.
Yeah, and they have a wire that comes down from the headphone and has a little box on the wire that has a microphone and a couple of controls on it, and also provides a place for a battery. Which powers the headphones. And then the cord continues on down to a regular phone plug that you can plug into your devices. And that was workable, but you kind of need to clip the little box on your shirt, or you kind of need to attach it to something on your clothing so that it'll kind of stay in place, because the box itself is just a little bit heavy. Just recently, they came out with a version of the aftershocks that are wireless. They're Bluetooth, and the original aftershocks are designed in such a way that they have a headband that goes around the back of your head, and the actual speakers sit right in front of your ears, right on your cheekbones. And so the Bluetooth model is designed exactly the same way. And what they've actually done is quite clever, is they managed to make the headband just slightly thicker than it is on the wired model. And that headband now is what accommodates the battery and the electronics, as well as an on-off switch and a volume control. So it's a little, you know, you have to reach behind your head to change the volume or turn the power on and off. So that people may or may not like that, but it's not a big deal. You just reach back there, and it's easy to tell. One end of the rocker switch turns the volume up, the other end turns it down, and the power switch is an actual physical switch. You just slide it to the right, power comes on. And when the power comes on, you hear three tones in the earphones let you know that the power's on. And then when it actually makes a Bluetooth connection to your phone or to your device, then you hear another set of beeps that let you know it's actually connected. And so getting the phone and the aftershocks Bluetooth model connected and paired together was very easy to do. I just turned them on and went to the Bluetooth section in my iPhone, and the phone immediately recognized the aftershocks, and you just double tapped on it and they were paired and started working. And they actually sound a little bit better than the original ones did. They have a bit more bass, and just the sound quality overall is a little better. So the Bluetooth, in my mind, is a big improvement because you get rid of all the wires. Everything is contained in the headphones. On the left piece that sits in front of your left ear, there's one button which controls your phone. So you can answer a call, you can hang up a call, you can press and hold and bring up Siri, and you can double tap with that button and redial the last number that you dialed. So that's what you can basically do with that left button. Now the right button, which is on the right piece that sits in front of your right ear, is a pause button. And this is the one trouble spot that I have with the aftershocks. The pause button works perfectly if you are listening to something in iTunes. You tap the button, the music pauses, you tap it again, the music starts playing again. It works perfectly. But if you use an app like Downcast or or the Audible app for listening to audiobooks, for some unknown reason, the pause button doesn't pause the playing of the books. But interestingly enough, if you manually pause the playing of the books by double tapping on your phone, the pause button on the Aftershocks does resume the playing.
Huh.
So it doesn't pause, but it plays. And why it only works in one direction is a great mystery to me.
Well, this is Robert. Excuse me for so rudely interrupting this podcast, but I wanted to give a brief update on the Aftershocks pause button situation. I did some research and discovered that many headsets, at least Bluetooth headsets, including the Aftershocks Blues, issues a play command only when the pause button is pressed. I'm not sure why this is the case, but apparently it is for a lot of headsets. And so the software has to be smart enough to realize that if it's already playing, that when it receives a play command, it needs to pause. Unfortunately, at this time, the Audible software and the Downcast software does not pause, even if it's playing, when it sees a play command from a Bluetooth headset. I have been in communication with the developer of Downcast, however, and he has implemented this feature in the next update to Downcast, which has already been submitted to the Apple App Store. So we'll soon see a version of Downcast that will properly pause when you press the pause button while playing a podcast wearing the Aftershocks Bluetooth headphones. And it'll also, of course, work with other Bluetooth headsets that have this same issue. I will follow up with Audible to see if we can get them to implement the same fix in their software. I have yet to hear back from Aftershocks, but I have communicated this issue to them, and perhaps they will be able to do something to modify the firmware of the Aftershocks in the future as well. But it looks very promising, like we're going to be able to resolve this issue. Now back to the podcast.
We've gone on for a while here, and so I don't want to extend this too much longer, but I will just touch on two other devices quickly that I'm thinking about or taking a look at. And these are devices that I heard about from listening to podcasts from the recent Macworld iWorld Expo show that takes place in San Francisco. And I don't know if that's close or far away from where you are, but
it's pretty close, and I want to go one year.
Yeah, it's a show that takes place every year, and I think it would be an exciting one to go to if you're at all into the Apple ecosystem, because it's a three-day extravaganza of all the Mac and iOS fans getting together and learning new things and seeing new products and all that. But a couple products that really intrigued me was there is a small device that is designed to be a very portable Wi-Fi router. And it's designed to let you take it, for example, into a hotel, plug it into the Ethernet connection in your hotel room, and then with no configuration on your part, it just comes up and operates as a Wi-Fi hotspot so that all of your devices that you have with you can connect to the Wi-Fi. And there is a way, of course, to password protect it and make it secure, but it just provides you with a very easy way to use one Ethernet connection in a hotel for multiple devices and to get them all online and working from that one connection. So it's called MySpot, and I will put a link to it in the show notes. And I don't remember the price, but it wasn't all that expensive, and it might be something that people would be interested in if you are wanting a portable router like that.
That's really cool because I know I've been in hotels where there's a charge for Wi-Fi, but not for Ethernet.
Right.
So I could see that as being a really nice way of getting around that charge. I mean, hotels charge enough as it is, so.
Well, the other frustrating thing is that a lot of times I've had the experience where a hotel will not only charge you for Wi-Fi, but they'll charge you for each device that you connect to the Wi-Fi. So it's not like you pay $9.95 for the day and you can connect all your devices. Every time you connect a different device, you pay another $9.95.
Right, and they change the password every 5 seconds, it seems. You're always having to get a new password to log in. It's really inefficient in a lot of hotels.
So in my spot might be something that you would want to think about if you do much traveling. It seems like a really worthwhile thing to have in your bag of electronic tricks that you travel with.
I agree.
The other device that I just wanted to quickly mention is one that I'm currently exploring in terms of accessibility. And the device is called the File Transporter. And what it really is it is a network storage device that comes with a hard drive built into it. You can either get it in a 2 terabyte or 3 terabyte model. If you may be able to get it even without a hard drive and attach your own. I'm not sure about that. I don't know all the details yet. But the purpose of it is you take this device and plug it into your router through an Ethernet cable, and then it sets up its own system, very similar to what you get through Dropbox, except that instead of having the files that you're sharing or the files that you're backing up copied into the cloud, i.e., into Dropbox, they're stored actually on this file transporter device. So you have complete control over your files and where they're kept and so forth. And this is especially important for someone like me who works in a profession where we really can't take the risk of putting confidential files, things like that, out on the internet because we can't guarantee their absolute safety once they leave our office or whatever. But something like this transporter would allow files to be stored and be very secure as long as you trust that the encryption that they're offering is safe when the files go from one place to another. But it is a what we call a peer-to-peer transfer. So they don't ever go to the file transporter servers or anything. They go straight to the person that you're sending them to. And if as long as they are encrypted, you should be fine. And it's a way to you have an off-site backup system that you have control over, a way to share files with other people, a way to keep lots of data in one place, like maybe all your photos or all your music or something like that. And then you can access that music or those photos or those files from anywhere you are in the world because you can always access your transporter over the internet. So it's kind of an exciting development, and I think they've done it in it seems to be a very proactive and good way of going about this. They were actually a Kickstarter project, and Kickstarter is a way of getting something funded, sort of crowdsource funding. People put up money for projects that they believe in, and this company got started that way. And so I'll put again a something in the show notes pointing you to the File Transporter site. But right now, I'm in communication with the developer to see whether or not the software that is required for the File Transporter to communicate with you over the internet and so forth to make sure that software is compatible with VoiceOver. I don't know. They're going to have an iOS version and an iOS app. I don't know. I assume they'll probably have or will have a Windows app. The only thing I know for sure right now is they have an app for the Mac that works with Transporter. They offered me the chance to sign up and try out the software by connecting to one of their transporter devices in their office. They were very accommodating and very helpful. Unfortunately, though, when I attempted to sign up, I ran into a CAPTCHA. where you have to fill in some data from an image. So I was not able to complete the sign up. So, and I reported that to them, and they're looking into that, see if they can come up with an alternative, something other than just an image based CAPTCHA. But it's a work in progress. It sounds like a promising device and something that we might be talking about more in the future.
Yeah, definitely sounds promising. I know that this is not the first of its kind, but I'll be definitely interested to see how it plays out. And again, it's all about choices. And I think this really sounds like it could be a viable choice. So that's great.
Yep. And so I just want to try to do as much as we can to keep people updated on things that are interesting that are going on out there, like these projects that maybe you haven't heard about before. And otherwise, you know, that's it's hard to keep up with
it is
with all that's going on. So maybe this can be a place where we do some of that. Thank you all for joining us this time.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah. And I will remind you that if you want to talk to us via email, it's techdoctor123@gmail.com.
I am at Allison, A-L-L-I-S-O-N, F-M, like FM radio, @gmail.com as well.
Excellent. All right. Well, from my end, I'll say so long until next time.
Bye, everyone.